Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit TrinitySchool.org for more info now.
What's in Chicago? Meet me. I'm in Chicago. This is Robert Evans, host of Behind the Bastards, the show that tells you everything you don't know about the very worst people in all of history. And today, I'm in the windy city that never sleeps on a Big Apple, Chicago, Illinois, with my co-hosts today, the hosts of the wonderful Knowledge Fight podcast, my favorite podcast, Dan and Jordan.
Hey!
Hey, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
I don't know your last names.
Well, it's irrelevant. We gave them up.
We're not allowed to say our last names on television. So.
It's a Mr. Mixelplex situation. We'll be banished to another dimension should we say our names.
Oddly enough, I have a friend who's like that, and it's Mr. Mixelplex.
It's you said his name backwards twice, though, so you got him. Yeah, I gotcha.
Terrible.
You can only visit him on certain occasions.
Thanks. Thanks for having us. You know, it's nice in Chicago. There's so many choices of people you could sit down.
A lot of things going on in Chicago. I was surprised at the cars.
Yeah.
As a Southerner and then a West Coaster, I didn't realize you had them here yet. But that's good. It's good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good.
Pretty recent.
Yeah. It's good.
Well, once the city burned down the first time, we were like, well, let's wait for the second to get some cars. But we decided against it.
Well, so. I'm proud of y'all. There's a lot going on in Chicago. Mainly it's cold.
Yeah.
Very cold.
Yeah. Have you been yelled at about food at all yet?
Oh, my God. Actually, I have a tale. This will be dropping an episode of Worst Year Ever. But we went totally on accident when we were covering Cody Johnson, Katie Stoll, and I were covering a Midwest Fur Fest. We went to accidentally what has to be one of the fanciest restaurants. It's one of the fanciest restaurants, maybe the fanciest I've been to in my life. So I'm guessing it's one of the fancier ones in Chicago.
Potbelly, yeah.
No, it was.
No? Okay.
The Capitol Grill. It was a place that, like, we walked in and they asked to take our coats and we said no. And they immediately looked like, oh, you're not supposed to be here.
That is just not done.
But they seated us and we ordered lobster bisque, which was fantastic. The food was phenomenal. And as I was eating my bisque, the waiter walked by and fetched me a look of pity and said, sir, is there something wrong with your soup spoon?
No.
I had used the wrong spoon.
I was half sure the problem was going to be that you put ketchup in the bisque, which is frowned upon.
I'm not quite that much an animal, but I am apparently a filthy animal because I used. Yeah, you know, I'm deeply ashamed.
Wow, as Chicagoans. Allow us to resolve, or what is that called? Absolve you of your food sin.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I thought
yeah.
you were going to double down.
No, I don't give a shit about bisque.
So we have never been to a swanky restaurant.
Do I look like I've ever touched a soup spoon?
It was purely by accident that we went there.
Jordan thought bouillabaisse was a cold soup.
I really did. It's not. I really did. This was on the way here.
Every soup that's not clam chowder, I assume, is gazpacho.
Gazpacho.
Yeah. I don't know other soups.
Jordan didn't know about tripe until earlier today.
I did
today.
Not know about tripe.
No. That's a shame.
Yeah, I really don't think it. Once I learned about tripe, it did not bother me that I didn't know about it for this long. Yeah.
It's not good.
No.
So normally, y'all host a podcast where you sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
That is true.
We're not doing anything like that today.
Okay.
That's
nothing even vaguely reminiscent of that.
I you told me earlier that we were going to talk about somebody that has nothing to do with InfoWars.
Couldn't be less involved.
And I was almost convinced it was a trap.
No, no.
We talked about Alex Jones before and then Mike Adams.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, normally I would have you on to discuss someone in Alex Jones's universe because that's your wheelhouse. But sometimes the sausage just got to be made, and you are the sausage packers nearby?
Yeah, I'll take it.
That's Chicago-y.
Chicago's not had sausage packing for a while, but I think we'll start the project again.
Well, do you guys know the name of a little fella named Adam Neumann?
No.
It does ring a bell.
Have you heard of a company called WeWork?
Yes.
It's that guy.
Oh, boy.
And he is a real piece of shit.
Okay. Now, that sounds right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to dive into this shit right now. Well, now I accidentally scrolled to the bottom of the page. Very professional. This is how the sausage gets made when we don't print it out. Adam, no discernible middle name, Neumann, was born in Tel Aviv, Israel, on April 25th, 1979.
It's very close to my birthday. I'm already very invested in this story.
And you were also born in Tel Aviv.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the American Tel Aviv.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Which is Van Nuys, California.
Yes, yeah.
He gets a lot of shit about the right to return laws for California.
Which is, you do not have them. Stay the fuck out of California. Yeah. There's too many people.
Yeah, yeah. No one's from here.
When he was seven, his parents divorced and his mother moved to New York City to do her medical residency. Adam and his sister, Avi, moved in with her. Now, I found other variations of Adam's story that claim the split happened when he was nine and that they moved to Minneapolis first. I think he lies a lot.
you know, on this show whenever it's like, I've heard multiple stories about his life.
Specifically when he came, inconsequential details. I don't know. I ran into both. We don't have a lot of granular details of his childhood, not a lot of anecdotes about him as a kid. But we know it was rough. He was severely dyslexic, still is severely dyslexic. You don't just...
Is that why WeWork is one word?
Maybe. Is that a dyslexic thing?
I don't think it is.
Welcome to Behind the Baskets, the podcast where we slander dyslexia and talk about terrible people. So, yeah, he was dyslexic, couldn't read or write at all until the third grade. And his mom moved constantly, so he lived in a lot of different homes and usually didn't spend enough time in any one place to build strong attachments to people there. I get that a little bit.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, in 1990, when he was 11, Adam's mom moved back to Israel, his family, and he settled in a kibbutz. You guys know much about kibbutzes?
I know a little bit about kibbutzes.
I like the word a lot. Yeah.
Kibbutzy?
It's like a commune, essentially, right?
Yeah, it's like an Israeli type of commune thing. Yeah. I'm going to talk about them a little bit. The first kibbutz was founded in a place called Degania, in Palestine at the time, now the nation known as Israel, in 1909 and 1910. Now, this is too complex a topic to do justice to as an aside in this episode, but it's reasonably accurate to say that the inspiring motivations behind the establishment of the first kibbutzim, I'm not really sure what's correct. I don't know Yiddish, is a mix of Zionism, admiration of literal classical Spartan values, and communism. So it's like a it was like an initially like very militant. So like when the Israeli war for independence or war of the Nakba,
yeah,
whichever term you prefer to use, when that happened, a lot of like the cells of like Israeli or not, I mean, they weren't Israeli at that point, of like Jewish partisans who like were active were like based around kibbutzes and mm-hmm. stuff. And like there were kibbutzes that were like manufacturing arms and stuff and like later wars and stuff. So there was like a militant swing to them, but also very leftist, very communist, very like communitarian.
Yeah. I assume that'll never go wrong.
And yeah, just a really fucking complicated thing. I please don't take this, like, read up more on them. I don't want to and they're all different too. So I'm sure there's a lot of kibbutzes that have very different backgrounds. But I found like a really fun lecture on the history of kibbutzes by a guy named Henry Neer, who was a professor at some fucking college. And I'm going to quote from that now. It was governed by all the members gathered in their weekly meetings. Meals were eaten in common in the central dining hall, which also served as a social and cultural center, and other items of consumption were distributed freely, or in accordance with the principle, to each according to his or her need. In its early stages, all decisions were taken in common by all the members. So that's the idea of a kibbutz, like pretty gotcha. Radical ground-up democracy. Yeah.
Sounds pretty all right.
Yeah, sounds like a fun way to live. Well. Yeah.
I don't know about the making arms part. I don't know if I'm going to sign up for that, that aspect of this.
Why wouldn't you want to make some arms?
It's not my thing,
a little bit of arms here, a little bit of arms there.
I just feel like I don't have the right kind of like dexterity in those skills.
No, I mean, really, really want kids for making arms because their little fingers can get in all those holes.
Sure, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Poke the little baby fingers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nobody makes an AK-47 like a couple of three-month-olds.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They really know how to...
They start them young, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, women and men both worked all day in the kibbutzes, kibbutzim. Their children were cared for in small groups, looked after by individuals who were a mix of teacher and nanny. Kids spent time in their parents' home after working hours, but in most cases slept with other kids in a children's house at night. In the early days, at least, all of the kibbutzes were part of a utopian movement towards a better society. One of the founders of the first kibbutz, Joseph Baretz, wrote this in his memoirs. We were happy enough working on the land, but we knew more and more certainly that the ways of the old settlements were not for us. This was not the way we hoped to settle the country, this old way with Jews on top and Arabs working for them. Anyway, we thought that there shouldn't be employers or employed at all. There must be a better way. Very left-wing, very utopian projects.
Yeah.
I just want to emphasize that.
Yeah, this being this show, though, I'm waiting for a hammer to drop.
Yeah, it goes in a not as utopian direction. They're still around.
Yeah.
They're not all, at least, the same that they were. So obviously, in the early days, they were all about agriculture. Some still focus on that. But today, they serve in a variety of industries. For example, Kibbutz Sasa serves the Israeli military making special military-grade plastics. Hmm. Its 200 members sold some $850 million in products in 2010. So these are not... These are not small, but necessarily.
Yeah,
that's a sizable business.
It's very different than what I was imagining.
Okay. And Kibbutz Nir Am, where Adam Neumann spent his formative years, currently hosts an innovation center that seems to focus as an incubator for the Israeli tech industry and looks like literally any tech building in San Francisco from the pictures I've seen. So, like, these are no longer, necessarily rural or, like hard scrabble things. Like, there's big businesses that are operated in these
things. Gotcha.
Now, by the time Adam and his family arrived at Kibbutz Nir Am, kibbutzes had moderated significantly from their early radical leftist ideology. And rather than being educated in a group of children on site, he went to the Sha'ar Hanegev, I'm so sorry for surely pronouncing that, school, which is near the Gaza Strip. His mother worked as an oncologist at a nearby hospital. And living in a kibbutz and taking part in its communal life was something that Adam's mom valued. He later recalled, "It was important to my mother that we all do something special." So yeah, every write-up you're going to find of this guy's life focuses on his time in the kibbutz. It seems to be something Adam himself has made a point of discussing with every journalist who interviewed him.
Right.
Despite how often it comes up, you seldom hear any details of his time there. One of the few scraps I ran into came from a Haaretz article. "As a child who lived in a lot of places, one of the hardest things for me was to join a new community. It was hardest at the kibbutz, but that was also one of the most impressive communities. I remember how much fun it was to be a child in the kibbutz."
I feel like I would probably speak the same, but also not very in detail about the time when I lived in Boston.
Yeah.
I don't remember much of it, but I could probably be like, hey, it made me who I am.
Right.
And you get the, he really drives home that it was a formative thing for him, but you also get the idea that it was kind of painful. He talks a lot about how The other kids that were on the kibbutz had all been born and like grown up there, and he had moved there when he was like 11 or 12 or so. So that was like obviously difficult.
He would have
been something of an outsider. He says he like made his way in and it was really rewarding. I kind of get the feeling that maybe this guy's never quite felt like he belonged anywhere.
It's like being the new kid in school, but the school happens to be a commune and nobody wants you there.
Gotcha. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't grow up in that particular Israeli kibbutz. Now, as a young adult, Adam went to the Israeli Naval Academy and served in the Navy for 5 years. So he didn't do like the minimum service you need to do. Like he made a thing of it. Yeah. He retired as a captain or left the service as a captain. Once he'd done his time, he followed in his mother's footsteps and moved to New York. He was 22 years old, and it was 2001, widely considered to be the very best year in history to move to Big Apple.
Yeah, I remember. The Blueprint dropped.
Mm-hmm.
The Yeah Yeah Yeah's first album.
Absolutely.
That was really, really good. The Strokes' first album. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. All of those happened on a day that I don't think anybody remembers for any reason at all.
No. 2001, particularly like the fall, early winter of 2001, autumn. Great time to be in New York, I assume.
Absolutely.
2001, particularly good time to be
Brooklyn
in New York.
Brooklyn dance punk was taking the nation by storm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
So he moves there in a perfect time. Now, his sister, Avi, had already beaten him to New York. She had been a former teen Miss Israel and had managed to turn that into a career as a model. She was a very successful model and is very famous in Israel, much more famous than actually he is to this day. He stayed in her Tribeca apartment while he worked to figure out what his future would be. Eventually, he settled on business and enrolled at Baruch College. In between classes, he, in his own words, spent his first years in New York hanging out at clubs and, quote, hitting on every girl in the city. He looked for, spent the rest of his time looking for get-rich-quick schemes. His first months in the USA brought with them some sobering revelations about American culture. Quote,
it's bullshit.
Yeah, kind of, actually, yeah.
It's all a fucking lie.
It's garbage.
We propagandize around the fucking world. Okay. Mm-hmm.
That a lot of other people are also trying get-rich-quick schemes.
Yeah. Shit, the city's full of people like me.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of people really wish they could get rich quick.
The whole thing about the American character being con artists and
it's a mix of con artists and gold rushers. Honest people are looking for a gold rush. The not honest people are con artists. The goal is always the same, which is to spend as little time living in the part of America that exists for people who aren't rich.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is hard and filled with GoFundMes for insulin.
Yeah, so far the places for Americans who aren't rich are not great.
No.
Most people want to get out of there. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I, for one, don't understand why you would want to live anywhere but the Pacific Palisades.
Mm.
But, my butler lives elsewhere, and he says there's decent parts.
You fly him in for the weekdays, or is he a weekend butler? Like
No.
Do you split custody of the butler with your ex-wife?
He takes the bus in, and he's, there's a tracking chip on him when he's in the Palisades. We don't want him to stay.
Absolutely.
Good Lord, no. Not after dark.
Oh, no.
Unless there's a party in which case we deliver a small series of electric shocks every 15 minutes so he doesn't get too comfortable, you know?
All right.
Yeah, ethics. Adam had a rough arrival to the United States, and I'm going to quote him now. After I arrived in the United States, I realized that in the Army, Israelis learned how to be part of something bigger than themselves. The things I had experienced in my life all came together. In our life, we had a lot of movement and a lot of new things, so I feel sorry for someone who's having a bit of a hard time because I know what it's like to be new. He found that he was like really frustrated by particularly the distance and kind of facelessness of American culture. Elevator rides were the things that most struck him. He recalled later to an interviewer that whenever he would travel up the elevator in his sister's apartment, he would wonder, why is nobody talking to each other? We're in the same building. How come you don't know everybody?
Oh, man. Man, if somebody talked to me in an elevator, I lose my shit.
I'm absolutely furious.
To be fair, I've had those very similar thoughts, but every time I've tried to act the opposite, it's been a disaster.
No, like I keep every a time tear I've gas tried grenade to say on hi me. To people, yeah. No.
They don't want me to say hi. I look like me.
Yeah. It's a captive environment. There's no escape route.
Yeah.
That's the issue there.
Yeah, you seem like
obviously until the door's open.
You seem very suspicious. You strike up a conversation in those times when we've, as a culture, just decided, shut it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't start a conversation in the bathroom.
The bus? Never. No.
The bus?
Never the bus.
Never the bus.
Absolutely not.
Never elevators.
No.
No, I keep a tear gas grenade on me at all times.
Smart.
And if anyone talks, I just pull that pin.
I will ends the conversation. Admit that I will begin a conversation if we're stuck in the elevator and I'm just at the place where I have to poop in the corner.
Yeah.
In that situation, I'm going to start with...
That's more of just a warning.
Sorry.
Yeah.
This is going to be rough for mm-hmm. all of us. I think we'll make it through.
There are different protocols for once you get to that point.
Right, though, right, you know, right.
The only place in America it's okay to talk to people is in line at the movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
That works.
That's it, really.
Okay.
That's it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Other than that, zip it.
Yeah. Keep it shut.
Doctors' waiting rooms? No.
Under no circumstances. No.
No. No eye contact no. on planes.
No.
I say a holding cell is probably a good place. Like, are you in on a DUI?
Yeah, a holding cell is another good place to talk.
That's
holding
less,
cells,
that's
movie
less
theater
talking.
Lines.
That's more like collaboration.
Yeah.
you're in a holding cell. You're getting something cooking.
That's
you know?
The beginning of the movie Blow. That's
that's
what
a get-rich scheme in the works.
I can say a lot of people at gun stores want to have conversations with you while you're waiting. You should not. You should not talk to those people. It does not end well. You will learn uncomfortable things about them.
I imagine every conversation at a gun store starts with my ex-wife, and that's where it goes through. Yeah, yeah.
Well, the government.
Let me tell you about the government. Yeah.
The federal government.
Either that or I got a lot of fucking gophers on my property.
How many misdemeanors for I can't buy one of these no more?
I imagine the people around there are full of trivia.
It is actually, it's just mostly gun trivia.
Yeah, very accurate trivia.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they changed the way the feeding ramp loads back in 1962, so that's it's very, very boring as a general rule. Adam gets to the U.S., fresh out of the military, is frustrated at, like, the distance and the kind of soullessness, the lack of communication in American culture. He challenges his sister, Abby, to a friend-making competition to see who could learn the names and establish cordial social relationships with the most people in the building the fastest.
That pisses me off.
Yeah, this is the first time. Really, like, this is the beginning of me saying, fuck this guy.
Like, yeah, this is it.
This is all I need.
Is him trying this to connect with people?
Him being like, let's have a friendship contest? Fuck that guy. I'm out.
Well, you're trying to gamify like
natural
interaction between people. That just seems weird.
Also, his sister's name is Addie. I'm a hack and a fraud and spelled it wrong.
Not
in the first
Abby,
part.
Addie.
Not Addie. Abby.
Gotcha.
Addie.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So,
is that long for something?
Probably. I don't know. It's his sister. She didn't do anything wrong. They get into a contest to see who can like build the most cordial social relationships.
Is she the
fastest.
Model?
Yeah, she's a supermodel.
She's going to win this contest.
She absolutely wins this contest very quickly.
Yeah.
Like almost immediately.
This guy seems like a creep and she's a model.
Yeah. This guy's weird.
Yeah.
He's trying to start conversations in elevators. Yeah.
And she's one of the most beautiful. Yes, she wins handily.
Right. Gotcha.
She has like six times as many friends as him after a week. It is not a close thing.
Feel for the guy.
Not a near run game. Mm. But Adam claims as a result of their contest, the entire energy of the building changed.
To what?
A positive
from
one.
What?
People would borrow sugar from each other. It was good. He says it was good.
Okay. All right.
Now, this is a common refrain in Adam's interviews, both the difficulty of meeting new people when you move a lot, the cold and informal nature of life in American society. Oddly enough, this sort of like understanding that whatever it is about our hyper-capitalist world makes people not want to connect with one another was paired in Adam with a deep bone-level belief in the goodness of capitalism. So that's interesting.
That doesn't make sense on any level.
It will continue to not.
Okay.
Or maybe it will.
Okay.
Capitalism alienates us from each other, and damn it, it's awesome.
It's so good. I believe in it.
I think it's more of a capitalism alienates, or people in capitalist societies are alienated. What if we could find a way using capitalism to make them less alienated?
Right.
Well, you just got to put like financial incentives for that friendship contest.
Let's see. Ooh, boy, that sounds like it's a disingenuous friendship then.
Got to turn this into like a reality show.
Are there
how
are
many
there
friends can you make?
Other friendships than those based on money? Like my friendship with my butler, for example.
Right,
weekend
right,
butler.
Right.
I don't know his name.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you?
Yeah, of course. Like, why would I?
It seems odd.
But no, when his wife died, because she couldn't afford her insulin, I did consider sending a flower, but then I thought, kind of sends the wrong message.
Well, maybe. I mean, if you inject the flower with insulin, that's a real bad one.
Yeah, especially that. I didn't want him to think he could talk to me in my elevator.
Right. That's a good call. You make him take the dumb waiter, of course.
Oh, well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, either that or the stairs. Yeah, usually the stairs.
Fair.
Yeah. Now, Adam, after this, decided to drop out of college and launch himself into a frenzy of ill-conceived business ventures. First, he started a business selling women's shoes with collapsible high heels for reasons I cannot quite explain.
Probably one of those like operations, you know, like Cutco, the knife sale people.
Right.
There's probably some women's shoe company he got hooked up with, right?
He started a business.
Oh, he did that himself.
No, he started his first two business. I'll give him credit for that. His first two businesses are not cons. Mm-hmm. They're products.
They're bad products, but
he is trying to start a legitimate business that sells a product.
I think we are three people here who have very little use for collapsible heeled shoes. Perhaps
maybe, we do not. I'm not going to speak for the women listening as to whether or not that's a good idea, but he did not execute it well.
Okay.
As proven by the fact that the company didn't work.
All right. Now, I think I'm a little bit late, but here's my pitch.
Okay.
Put some wheels on those. Do you remember those sneakers?
The wheelies?
That had wheels?
Yeah.
I don't see any high problem wheelies. There.
Yeah.
Soap shoes.
Collapsible high heels and expanded,
perfect.
Perfect.
Next, he made the leap to selling specialty baby clothing.
It collapses, of course.
It collapses.
What's the specialty?
There were actually breakaway baby clothing. Turned out that attracted, sold very well to the wrong people.
To the
wrong people.
This baby's dressed up like a priests. Cop and it's about to dance.
Oh, in fact, the Vatican ordered $7 million worth, which was really...
Watch out.
The ones he designed were called crawlers with a K. And they were normal baby pants with knee pads sewn into the legs, which actually meshes uncomfortably
terrible.
With my Vatican joke.
Boy. I don't think the Vatican has carpet, though, so you don't need to... What? Mm-hmm.
So, in order to distract us from that, whatever...
I'd like to point out I did not take part in that riff.
That's good.
Yeah.
You know who else doesn't...
He's a conscientious objector. Yeah.
You know who else is a conscientious objector in the realm of... priests molesting baby
sponsors.
The sponsors of the show.
There we go.
And that is an ad plug. Products. Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank. You know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro? Amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Celebrate the end of your workday with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy Thursday flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. LifeLock monitors and alerts you to identity threats you may miss on your own. even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become the victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve identity theft issues on your behalf. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Why wait for your tax refund in vain? Help protect your information immediately with LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com/news and save up to 25% your first year. That's 25% off at LifeLock.com/news. Identity theft protection starts here.
And we're back. We're back and we're talking about Adam Neumann and his so far god-awful attempts to make it big in America.
Women's shoes, padded knee baby
right.
clothes.
To his credit, real businesses.
That's not as crazy actual as products. Some things I've heard.
No, nope. No. Nope.
Okay. Are you telling me that his name is A. Neumann?
A Neumann.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, there we go.
It is.
I just needed that cleared
it's like
up.
It's a superhero.
I just needed to be, yeah.
The guy, it's the superhero whose power is talking to you in an elevator.
right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Like his power is never taking the hint.
Yeah. I feel like I have a completely unfair picture of this guy already in my head, but...
You don't.
Yeah. I think I've nailed him.
Okay.
So, now Adam had started Crawlers with a $100,000 investment from his grandmother. By the time the financial crisis slammed down in 2008, he'd spent every dime of that investment, and his almost shockingly bad idea for a company was nearly out of gas. He had to hire a lawyer just to renew his visa to stay in the USA. Comes from a wealthier family.
Gotcha.
Not like rich, but well enough off that his grandma had an extra $100K to...
Yeah.
Yeah. So this difficult time for Adam's business prospects proved to be the most important period of his life. For one thing, it's when he met his future wife, Rebecca Paltrow. He was 28 at the time, and Rebecca recalls that he was really, really thin, and he was shaking because I think he was smoking too many cigarettes.
And he was engaged in a friend-making contest. He approached me, and then we got married.
She claims simultaneously that when she first talked to him, she realized both that he was full of shit and that he was her soulmate.
Wow. That's a shocking portrait of of another person.
Yeah. I guess that's the most self-aware thing you could say.
It is the most self-aware thing she has ever said.
Yeah.
Now, they went out for lunch, and Adam couldn't afford to pay for anything or for the cab ride because he was broke.
Do you accept novelty baby clothes?
Yeah, they did not. Rebecca insulted him for talking a big game but having no actual money, and Adam justified it by calling himself an entrepreneur whose money was all in inventory.
Sure.
But yeah, they got together. They were married a couple of months later. So like very, very quickly.
All right. He's getting better at making friends.
He's gotten a lot good at making this one friend.
Okay.
Now, at the time, Rebecca had done a little bit more with her life than her paramour. She'd been a stock trader for like a week or two. She'd spent time in a Buddhist monastery and been to the Dalai Lama's birthday party because she's rich as well. She toured with Michael Franti and Spearhead.
What?
Not playing. Oh, she was a
just
groupie
like wandering around,
following Michael Franti
so,
and Spearhead.
I reject this.
Are you a Spearhead fan?
No, I was hanging out with a friend of mine from high school last night, and one of the things I've always accused him of is being super into Spearhead, and he claims that is not true at all. They literally were something that I was yelling about last night. Why would...
That's a wild coincidence. Yeah.
It's because they have a line in one of their songs, like, there's a war on cancer, war on drugs, war on police, war on hugs. And I'm like, there is not a war on hugs.
There is absolutely a war on... Have you been in an elevator recently? Zero people hugging.
When you try to hug someone on it, they do not appreciate it, Dan.
My mind is completely blown that this lady went on tour with Spearhead.
Yeah, she went on tour with Spearhead.
God damn Spearhead.
And it's here I should drop... that she's Gwyneth Paltrow's first cousin.
Oh, I totally knew that.
Yeah. Goop. Yep. Nah, keep that one in mind. Yeah, the goopy of it all. Now, Rebecca and Adam started dating, and she helped him quit smoking and soda.
You said cousin?
First cousin.
Okay.
Close
cousin.
So
cousins. She's dupe.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
They started dating. She helped him quit smoking and soda. She introduced him to Kabbalah, the Jewish mystical tradition, and worked to stop him from obsessing over money so much.
I assume that worked.
It absolutely did.
Gotcha. So this is the end of the story.
This is the end of the story. Okay. Good episode,
good.
Guys.
Good, good.
This is about a man who played a friend game in his building, and we hate him. And that is the end of his crimes.
Yeah. He played a friend game that's kind of endearing, but also honestly, profoundly lame.
This episode is just about getting our fans to hunt this man down. He lives in a small apartment in Van Nuys now. So grab a gun.
Friendless. Yeah.
No. She tried to make him stop obsessing over money, and Adam later recalled, Rebecca said, "Stop. No more talking about money. We're going to talk about wellness, happiness, fulfillment. And if the money is supposed to follow, it will. And if it doesn't, it doesn't matter, because we will be happy and fulfilled."
That's the thing an asshole says.
That is the thing a rich asshole said. Asshole has ever said, if the money's supposed to follow, it will. No, they say, what about the insulin?
Assholes say, like, food is good.
Yeah. Mm. Poor assholes say, like, we got to fucking make rent. Mm. Yeah. So, it was clear, though, that making fuckloads of money was the only thing that would actually make Adam happy and fulfilled. The baby clothes game was not working out, but while he was failing at a second business, Adam fell in love with the building where Crawlers had its office space, an otherwise empty former warehouse in Brooklyn's rapidly gentrifying Dumbo neighborhood.
That's a neighborhood?
Yes. I know. Every new thing I learned about New York.
So many fucking racist crows in that neighborhood, too.
Terrible.
It's awful.
They had to have a warning.
Disney Plus put up a sign outside that neighborhood, yeah.
Strangest juxtapositions of my life was as a child, the racist crows in Dumbo.
Yeah.
As an adult, the very different but also similar racist crows in Fritz the Cat.
Yeah.
But very different. Wow. I don't know, even like the Rick, because it really directly deals with things like police violence against the black community. Very complicated film.
Yeah.
The most complicated film with a mouse Nazi bike. Was he a mouse? What species was the Nazi biker?
I have no idea. I just remember Fritz the Cat's the one with the bag, right? I'm way off. I'm thinking of a completely different cat. Now I remember what we're actually talking about.
Fritz the Cat is the one about the cat who fucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about a different cat.
Yeah. Great movie. I've never seen it not tripping, but have seen it 5 or 6 times and remember enjoying it and also feeling confused and conflicted at certain parts. Ralph Bakshi, everybody.
A lot of
check him out.
Got really turned on by certain things.
All of the
same issue watching the Robin Hood Disney movie, if you remember that one. A lot of complicated feelings.
Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Yeah. Fritz is interesting because all of the black people are crows, much like in Dumbo, but all of the police are literal pigs. And it's quite a film. Made in like the 60s, 70s. Weird movie.
Yeah.
Haven't seen a good breakdown haven't seen it sober. Maybe I should. Maybe I'm talking about horrible racist propaganda. I don't think it was, though. I think it was about as woke as possible for the era.
Sure.
But I may be wrong on that. I remember enjoying it. This has been too long a digression on Fritz the Cat. the baby clothes game, you know, Adam falls in love with the building where the Crawlers had its office space, which is an empty warehouse in Brooklyn's Dumbo neighborhood. He meets up with the neighborhood, Joshua Goodman, and tells him, give me the building. Goodman was like, no.
I assume that's at knife point that he told him, give me the building.
It's great. It's got to be great to be like the kind of person who could just be like, I want that building.
I want that building.
Get me that building.
Yeah. I want that building.
So Gutman's like, no, and shoots back. Because basically Adam's not saying like, give me ownership of the building. He's saying like, let me control the space and rent it out. It's empty. Mm. And Goodman is like, why would I do that? You sell baby clothes.
Goodman makes a good point here.
Yeah, you know nothing about this industry.
Goodman, good point.
And Neumann responds, your business is empty. What do you know about real estate?
Get him.
All right, what do you know about business, you asshole? Let's do this. Let's tit for tat this all day. Yeah. Huh?
I feel like they might be in an impasse here.
Yeah. He convinces Goodman. And Goodman pairs with Adam and his business partner, a guy named Miguel McKelvey, who'd grown up in a commune in Oregon. So they both have that sort of like
everybody's
similar
commune,
background.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And together they found a company called Green Desk, which was billed as an environmentally friendly co-working space.
Hmm.
Now, the idea for Green Desk was actually based on a failed business plan
plan Adam had created for a competition at Baruch College before he dropped out. The idea was, in his words, community-structured real estate, which would meld working and living space together in a manner reminiscent of the kibbutz. The plan failed to progress to the second round of the contest, and Adam complained to the dean about this, and the dean told him, "There's no 23-year-old or any inexperienced real estate person who will ever be able to raise enough money to do anything like concept living." So
I really feel like that reminds me more of like when the railroad barons built their own cities mm-hmm. and used their own currency mm-hmm. and shit like that mm-hmm. and made people mm-hmm. live on them. So that's yep. where I'm at right
yep.
now.
Yep. Yep.
I feel like that business model's been tried before.
You're heading right in the right direction.
Okay, there we go. All right.
So now Green Desk, though, wasn't a whole lot like a kibbutz. It was basically a way for small businesses and individuals working as contractors to lease short-term office space for an affordable price. And this wound up being a really fucking smart move because in 2008, the economy collapsed and there were suddenly a ton of people out of work and switching careers and businesses looking to cut costs, and Green Desk did really well.
We have an overhead projector. We mm-hmm. have a table. Yeah. There's pens.
None of you have money. Yeah. Yeah. Within a year, the business was valued at around $3 million. So they do
not bad.
Very successful.
Not bad.
That's probably more successful than the other two of his businesses.
Wildly, neither of the other two succeeded.
Not even
neither
close
of them
to
made
that.
Money. Okay. No. This is his first success.
Okay.
Now, Goodman was like, we should maybe do this in more buildings. This is a good idea. Let's expand, conservatively to other spaces and, see how far this plan takes us.
Let's very get the fuck out of Dumbo.
Sure.
Thing that, continue and try another couple of spaces. But Neumann and McKelvey are like, fuck that. We're going to start another business. So they sell out their shares in Green Desk in 2010 for about $300,000. Most of the money went to the guy who owned the space, right. Obviously. They used this seed money to launch WeWork. Now, unlike Green Desk, which had been a modest ambition based around a compromise with an uncertain landlord, WeWork was from the beginning a bold vision. Adam Neumann wanted to create what he called a capitalist kibbutz, a global network of workspaces that would eventually extend beyond merely short-term office rentals.
So what he'd like to do is create a capitalist commune.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a contradiction there, but I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah.
They both start with C. I guess alliteration is my issue.
Here. Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. They should have fixed that in post. Now, from the beginning, they had trouble convincing landlords that they wanted to rent them space of their vision. McKelvey, his partner, later recalled, "We didn't have credibility or credit. We had no business taking out a 40,000 square foot lease." But using Adam's charisma, his ability to convince people, which is significant, they managed to
not for
get people on board.
But yeah.
Not for friendships.
Yeah.
I mean, not compared to his sister,
but
she is a model. Now, in that same interview, Neumann explained that the landlords needed a lot more than just a vision. In the end, they were only able to convince one person to rent them one floor in a building as a trial run. But this was a wild success. And over the next 5 years, WeWork expanded all over the world at an astonishing pace. People started to invest millions and then tens of millions and eventually billions of dollars in the company. When Adam would sell them on the idea, he presented WeWork as much more than just a real estate company. He spoke about creating the first physical social network.
All I hear is Enron.
It's interesting that you say that. Yeah.
You just described Enron to me. That's all I'm hearing.
Yeah.
It's interesting you said physical social network, and they immediately, me and Jordan, both deep inhale.
Yeah. Whew, that sounds like bullshit.
Yeah. Got a lot of bells.
Especially
knowing what WeWork is.
Yes.
It absolutely is like, fuck this.
What I wanted to do was build a flag factory that only builds giant red flags. That's
yes.
what I'm going for right here. Gotcha.
Probably more successful than baby clothes.
Yes. I mean, I could actually use a couple of red flags. Mm. I am full of them. He wanted to create the first physical social network. And when he would explain what that meant to people, he said he wanted WeWork offices to not just be places where people worked. He wanted them to be places where people could talk about their jobs, their families, their problems, and love.
Oh, so like an office.
Like a neighborhood, yeah. I think, is more the idea. He was trying to recreate that 50s style idea of a neighborhood, but condensed within specially catered and decorated office buildings that he owned and sold access to.
I feel like this is him rigging the friendship contest. That's what I'm hearing right here.
I'm getting strong vibes.
This is him just being like, fucking sister, I'll show her. My business is going to be a friendship competition.
You do feel like this was the result of him fuming over losing the friendship contest and reading like an old history of the labor movement that talked about company towns.
Yeah.
Or he's like walking home after his sister wins and he hears that St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. Sold my soul to the company store. Wait a tick.
Hold on. Light bulb.
Yeah.
Exploitation.
It's an absurd thing to try to sell for hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah. A very silly idea. Obviously, the idea of like, well, let's rent short-term office space. Totally reasonable within the context of businesses people can run.
Absolutely.
Sure. People need it. Why not? Which is what Green Desk was. That's not what Adam's trying to sell.
Does Green Desk continue like through as the
I don't know. Okay. Probably. I think so. But yeah, Adam, this is a dumb idea, a stupid idea to like literally any normal person. But Adam wasn't selling this idea to normal people. He was selling this idea to investors.
Ah.
And investors, if I know one thing about capitalism, are all super fucking dumb. The more money they have to invest, the dumber they is.
Robert, money equals intelligence. How many times do rich people have to tell us that? There are betters.
And that's why
that's
Uber
why they have money.
Is the most profitable company in the world.
Of course. Mm.
It doesn't lose $2 billion every 6 months or so. What a silly thing.
That'd
people wouldn't
ridiculous.
Keep pumping money into
what,
it.
What kind of company could exist losing that much money on a regular basis?
A none. Smart one.
Oh, God. So Adam sold this idea to investors and also to his employees. And the answer to how he sold this very dumb idea basically boils down to the fact that he was really fucking charismatic on one-on-one situations.
So he made friends with these investors.
He more like cult members.
Oh, boy.
Now, there's a really good New York Times article, Adam Neumann and the Art of Failing Up, which... pretty good way to frame it. I'm going to read a
history
section
of white people in America.
I'm going to read a section from that article that I think encapsulates the way Adam both led and sold his company. Quote, and this is from Adam Neumann stood on the 57th floor of the Woolworth Building, the neo-Gothic skyscraper that was once the tallest in the world. It was late on a Friday night in 2013, and the WeWork founder and chief executive had just made a move to add the top 30 floors to his rapidly expanding real estate dealings. Mr. Neumann and three employees had already enjoyed a few drinks when he decided to bring them to tour his latest coup. In the gutted-out space, they tossed beer bottles into empty elevator shafts, listening to them clink on the way down. Then Mr. Neumann told them all to follow him out to the ledge. No guardrails. No enclosures. Just four inebriated startup executives teetering on the edge of death. I was up there with him at the top of the world, and he said, "Everything is going to be amazing," recalled Harrison Weber, WeWork's editorial director at the time. Then Mr. Neumann picked up an old beer bottle, a remnant apparently from some previous bender. He asked the employees to drink the rank liquid. Everyone took a swig, except for Mr. Weber.
What is this, the end of Lost?
It felt like a loyalty thing, he said. In that moment, I felt what a deeply persuasive person he is.
Man, I assumed that he would be up there the way I would, which is just screaming at them, "Do it, man! Push me over! Fucking do it!
You would have the balls to kill me!
You have the fucking balls!
Know that I'm still CEO!
I'll give you one shot right fucking now if you got the balls."
That is how you get investment.
You can't be too charismatic when you're doing that.
I honestly feel like that behavior is very... similar to a lot of people that I may have been annoyed by in past jobs. You know, like that does not seem far afield from some professional douches.
Oh, no.
No, absolutely not. No.
It's just, it's a real bummer.
It's an elevation of scale. Like if the shitty bosses
drink
that I've
this.
had that kind of bullshit charisma as well as just an insane psychopathic confidence, then they would try and do the same shit. Like, it's just a different level of abuse of power.
I can't even like suggest music to people, lest I like feel like they're gonna reject me for it. Let alone like drink this swill.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's a testament to how good he was at doing this to most people that by 2015, WeWork was valued at more than $10 billion.
Jesus,
they rented out hundreds of properties on multiple continents. So. whatever you can say about them, at least in 2015, it looks like it's fucking working like gangbusters.
It's such like a, things just don't exist anymore. There's nothing, there's no, no thing. No, money's of
not
value.
Real is
yeah,
the thing.
It's yeah. imaginary. It's entirely yeah. imaginary.
This story really illustrates a couple of things to me. One, money isn't real. And two, money is like dumb, not in the sense that, like, ah, oh, it's so dumb that like we have to live under capitalism. No, money is dumb in the sense that like money makes bad decisions.
Yeah.
The more you have of it, the worse decisions mm-hmm. you make. That tends to be the truth. And the story of WeWork is the story of a lot of people with infinite resources making horrible decisions. Until their resources are less infinite.
it's like Tarantino's career. Like once he got enough cachet, he makes mm-hmm. movies that are probably an hour too long.
Yeah.
But when he was coming up, it was like perfectly paced,
yep.
right time, all that stuff.
You're making the argument that like you got to stay hungry, that kind of thing. But when this dude was hungry, he made collapsible shoes.
No, yep. I'm saying you got to surround yourself with people who are going to say no whenever you have a dumb idea.
But this isn't a dumb idea, clearly.
Well,
yeah. At the same time,
Uber's a great idea. I get it. But yeah.
I don't know if I've ever. I think I've talked to like maybe two people who have used WeWork spaces.
Yeah,
and I've talked to a lot to of shit. People Good in my review. Life.
Yeah.
So that seems like a low engagement.
It'll make sense why what's going on here a little bit later.
Yeah.
Great question.
I have a desk.
Yeah.
I'm poor as shit. I have a desk.
Now, in articles at the time, around 2015 to 16, WeWork was kind of hitting its zenith. Adam and those around him tended to credit their meteoric rise on the hip, cool flair they brought to what was traditionally the least soulful part of a person's life, the office. WeWork spaces were decorated in like a variety of super cool, like funky hip furniture.
They have stuff kegs find, too, right?
Like, they absolutely have kegs.
This yeah. is Poochie the dog.
Yeah,
this is Poochie
yeah.
all of it. It's a cool
Poochie.
Version
it's a Poochie
of the,
situation,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
but it works longer than Poochie yeah. did. They had funky, comfortable furniture, kombucha, and beer on tap. I'm going to quote now from a 2016 article.
Fuck you, kombucha and beer.
Oh yeah,
fuck off.
Yeah. It's cool, yeah. bro.
Fuck
it's cool,
off.
Bro. We got no. fucking. No. We got brews, bro. Uh-uh.
I may have actually worked at a company that supplied a couple WeWork locations with coffee. I may have actually dealt with their corporate structure before.
I want to punch that
I should
idea
probably
in the
not
face.
Talk about this.
I will say that I worked in the past at an unnamed company that had a Thirsty Thursday where they mm-hmm. provided employees initially with unlimited beer and wine on Thursday afternoons. Mm-hmm. And people made horrible decisions.
Yep.
It was a really bad idea, actually, to give a bunch of people who are united by nothing than that they work in the same building access to unlimited free alcohol once a week.
There was some of that vibe at fuck it, at Groupon.
If there's
my time
anything
there,
I know.
Until someone threw up in one of the social rooms, and then they were like, hey, let's not allow
Tone
this.
It back a
yeah,
little bit.
Let's not allow this anymore.
I've always thought a lot of my inter-office relationships could have been improved by less inhibitions.
Sure.
Yeah, see, yeah. I think the way to run an office, really, is once a year. You just dose everyone against their will and consent with like 9 to 10 hits of MDMA
okay.
per person.
Okay.
Like enough that they're hallucinating.
Right.
Like not just rolling, but
right.
really can't control their bodies.
And you got to go to 9 or 10.
Yeah.
You can't just go 3.
Yeah,
four.
We're talking about a gram a piece at once.
okay.
So really just overdose the whole office.
It's the elderly woman who sits at the front desk who's going to be our test subject here.
And then. Friendship contest.
And then friendship contest.
Yeah.
It's going to be a few days after until people are ready to have a friendship contest or talk. But
fuck a trust fall.
So I found a fun quote in a 2016 Fast Company article about what it was that made WeWork special. And this was a very positive article. This is back before anyone's got questions about WeWork. It has to be the beer, a coworker tells me, believing that the secret to WeWork's success is the always-on-tap brew in its kitchens. But the hip, fun, millennial things people most often cite when they try to describe WeWork are almost irrelevant, as I discover while working from two New York locations this winter. The room full of old arcade games at the 222 Broadway location is empty all day, and the controllers for a nearby Nintendo 64 sit in a neat line, wrapped tightly by their cords in a way that suggests they've been undisturbed for some time. At the end of the day, I see only three people pull the famous WeWork tap. Mostly people inside WeWork are just working.
It'd be so, so funny if they had all this like video games and beer, but they also had like a really strict dress code. Well,
you get the feeling it's the kind of thing like you go in for a job interview at WeWork and somebody's like, yeah, you want a beer from the tap? But if you actually take it during the job interview, they'll be like,
everybody's watching you out of the corner of their eye, just like, we'll see what you do.
But there is a lot of drinking, which we'll get to later. It's just not when you'd choose to.
Okay.
Now, more than beer, WeWork owed its success to investors. Its whole business hinged on getting angel investors and giant companies to invest hundreds of millions of dollars into its expansion, not unlike Uber. And the reason so many of these very moneyed individuals were willing to trust Adam Neumann with fortunes that could have funded whole nations is that he was very good at selling them on a stupid dream.
By
taking them up to the roof, making them drink his piss.
Or invest in my company.
The focus of his promises centered around his time in the kibbutz. He would weave a story to investors of the idea that office space could fulfill the same role of the kibbutz in creating community and inspiring creativity. He invented his own buzzword term. This is going to piss you off.
Monorail.
Turn down Jordan's mic before you drop this off.
The we generation. The we generation, he called
it.
The we generation. It's what he used to describe millennials who'd grown up in a world where renting and not owning was the norm, and no employment situation was likely to last more than a couple of years. Now, most people...
adult roommates.
View this
the
as
we starve generation, man. Fuck off.
Most people view this as a problem for millennials, but Adam Neumann viewed it as a marketing opportunity. The we generation, he told investors, cares about the world, actually wants to do cool things, and loves working. And when he made these claims, it was not without any kind of backing. In 2016, a group called Project Time Off released a study on the work habits of millennials. They measured members of our demographic for habits evident of what they called work martyrdom. Now, work martyrs are more likely to forfeit vacation days, more likely to work excessive hours, and more likely to be seen as workaholics by their colleagues than members of any other generation.
This is getting too real.
Yeah. When Adam Neumann frames this as loving to work, it sounds like one thing. But if you read the statements that that Project Time Off study found millennials tended to agree with, I think you're presented with a much darker picture. And I'm going to read four of them right now. No one else at my company can do the work while I'm away. I want to show complete dedication to my company and job. I don't want others to think I am replaceable.
Oh boy.
I feel guilty for using my paid time off. That's not healthy.
Those
are symptoms of deep problems within our...
I would. You might as well have just been like, I'm drowning.
I am
all the
dying.
Time. I'm drowning.
I know the bottom can fall out at any moment. Somebody. Everything about my life, I could be on the street in three weeks. That's what that says to me.
I broke my foot and now I'm homeless.
Exactly. These are signs of panic at the reality of poverty and its very imminent nature in most of our lives, not signs of a love of work.
No.
And I think Adam knows that.
Oh.
Born in 1979, he's not a millennial, the cutoff for that is usually 1981, but he's close enough that I think he gets what it's like for the folks in the we generation. But he also understands how employers think. If you are running a company, you want your employees to spend unreasonable hours at the office and devote themselves irrationally to the work. That is great for your bottom line. Nap rooms, yoga classes, and free beer seem like perks, but the goal in providing all that is to keep you in the office longer, working more hours. I think what Adam sold, more than anything, was a vision to employers of employees who made work the center of their very life. Here's another Adam Neumann quote from that Fast Company interview. If you understand that being part of something greater than yourself is meaningful, and if you're not just driven by material goods, then you're part of the we generation.
All right. So I am wondering how many people have shivved him, because the number should be more than zero.
Not one.
More than zero.
Shocking.
There were no knives on the roof.
You can make a knife out of anything if you believe in yourself.
No one took that beer bottle, smashed it.
That really would have been the just way for the story to end.
Man, there really was a moment where just a little trip and we would have been saved WeWork all over. The,
none of this would have had to happen.
Infinite universes.
There was a banana peel up on top.
This is actually the only universe where he wasn't shoved off that roof.
I knew we were living in the wrong one.
In the 80% of the universes where he was, the police didn't even prosecute.
No.
And this is
someone
also...
told them the story and they were like, you know what? Nope.
This is also the only universe where the baby clothes thing didn't take off.
Yeah.
It's surprised. A great idea in every other universe.
I'm surprised. Because
babies are always complaining about their knees.
You're
That's
crawling
what everyone knows
everywhere.
About babies.
Yeah. As your baby had to have knee surgery, I think you need these.
He made blowjob pants for babies.
I retract my interaction with this bit now.
So, Adam's not a dumb guy. Anti-materialism, like anti-capitalism, has grown up among members of our generation because we've been largely cheated out of the promises that our system made to older generations. Adam's anti-materialism, however, is not a rejection of capitalism. It's a way to make capitalism more profitable. If you convince workers that their job provides them with a variety of non-material benefits, then you can work them harder while paying them less. Now, if a potential investor needed proof that millennials could be sold on Adam Neumann's vision of the workplace as a neighborhood, they need look no further than the actual staff at WeWork. I'm going to quote from a New York Times right up here.
That's actually really weird to think about. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the people work at WeWork.
Mm-hmm. You know, they do. I mean, it's a big company.
Yeah, that's – so you almost just – I think of it as like an empty space.
We work at WeWork. Well, but you got to like manage all that shit, right?
Yeah,
you got
totally.
Salespeople. Yeah. You got the whole thing. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to quote from that New York Times piece about sort of the culture of the company. Whew, boy, this might be a mic down clip for you, Jordan.
Across podcasts, people have learned that I need to shut the fuck up.
Telling Jordan to put the mic down is now the John Munch of podcasts.
Mr. Neumann would convince employees to take shots of pricey Don Julio tequila, $110 a bottle, work 20-hour days, attend 2 a.m. meetings. He'd convince them to smoke marijuana at work, dance to Journey around a fire in the woods on weekend excursions, smoke more pot, drink more tequila. Even people who don't really seem the tequila type would go along with his act, including a pre-White House Jared Kushner, who imbibed while scoping out a property in Philadelphia. In his view, WeWork didn't simply sublease office space to workers. It supplied them with kombucha, cold brew coffee, and an ecstatic sense of community. They're coming to us for energy, for culture, Mr. Neumann would say.
Don't stop believing.
I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
I'm doing fine. Now this
real
is
coiled good. Spring
this
feeling good. Over there.
Now, you guys want to guess if Jay Kush is going to play a bigger role in this episode?
I'm getting the sense he is.
Oh, he absolutely is.
He accidentally entered into a friendship contest.
He did. He did. And everyone lost.
Okay.
Yeah. You know who...
So
arguably
here's what
one?
He's doing. He's CEO
making weed
of a
into
company,
lane.
Yeah.
And he's getting the people who work for him
To be his friends. He's
very,
forcing
very
them to drink and smoke at work.
High and drunk.
Yeah.
In order to break down their defenses, force them to continue working as hard as humanly possible, while at the same time worshiping him as something of a charismatic god.
And
this sounds familiar to me, and I don't know why.
It sounds like nothing that's ever been done before.
Nothing.
As a loyalty test, he makes them dance around a fire to Journey, which is mathematically the douchiest thing you could possibly do.
All right, now we're not going to be attacking Journey on this podcast.
Did you know that the keyboardist for Journey is married to Paula White Kane, Trump's spiritual advisor?
That makes complete sense.
Yep.
That's entirely. Mm-hmm.
That Jonathan makes total sense. Kane, I believe.
Yep.
That makes total sense. Mm-hmm. And I have now stopped believing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to hold on to that feeling.
Nope.
What are you going to do?
Wheel in the sky, just stop turning.
You're going to have to switch back to Rush.
Oh yeah, they did that one too. Huh?
Yeah.
That's a better song than Don't Stop Believing.
And Faithfully.
That's not a great song.
No. It's not that great. Although in the music video, there's a great shot of Steve Perry shaving his mustache, looking really sad. He's like, you know, hey man, gotta go do shows. Gotta shave this mustache off.
He wasn't faithful to it.
This is the most affecting moment. This is the push.
It stuck with me.
Yeah.
Now, Adam's wife, Rebecca, was a major part of the whole operation. She eventually became the chief brand officer. More on that in a little bit.
That's not a job. That's not a job. Refuse.
It is now.
Pass.
She was an integral part of designing the feel of WeWork as a brand.
Stop it. Get the fuck out of here.
As a certified yogi, and more importantly... And more importantly...
Certified yogi? Certified by fucking who?
Jordan, sorry. What's more legitimate than a certified yogi?
I'm sorry.
A certified yogi who was the cousin of Gwyneth Paltrow and went to the Dalai Lama's birthday.
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Yeah. I'm doing great. So I'm doing all right.
Makes total sense. There's rigid certification for yogis. This is something that you
got to do 8 years of school. You got to do five-year internship.
I'm honestly shocked that you don't know this.
There's, it's actually easier to be an oncologist.
I remember reading the autobiography of a yogi by Sri Ramakrishna or whatever his name is, and he said specifically after he learned how to float, that was when he got his certification to be a yogi. That was it.
There's government regulations about this.
Once he got the power of levitation.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rebecca, as a certified yogi and a cousin of Gwyneth Paltrow, was an expert at adding wooey new age nonsense to what should have been like a business. She repeatedly claimed in interviews that when she met Adam, she was suddenly taken with a strong belief that he could save the world. In an episode of The School of Greatness, an insufferable YouTube show, she said this: "My intention was never to find a way to make the most money. My intention when I met him was just, how do we expand this good vibration to the planet?"
Boo.
Just got to explain the vibration, man. Got to expand Adam's good vibes.
Has anybody ever defined megalomania to her?
It wouldn't take.
Okay,
I'm going to tell you right now. It would not. It would not take.
Okay, fair enough. I apologize.
Gwyneth Paltrow's first cousin.
Always, every time I think of words, I assume that people understand their meaning and apply them. But I was wrong.
I'm having a really tough time because I was coming in with a fairly positive view of her.
Gwyneth Paltrow?
No, her cousin.
Oh, okay.
The wife, because you said earlier that like when they first met, she made fun of him.
She told him he was full of shit.
Yeah.
And then she married him and got involved in his business.
I kind of thought like, yeah, maybe she's pretty cool, and then every added detail just like, nah, she's not good.
You're full of shit. Like me.
Yeah. I can use you as a weapon.
Now, Adam embraced the image of the guru CEO. He threw raucous wild parties in the office where employees were all but forced to drink. He walked around barefoot and would have his personal trainer meet him in his office and then walk around afterwards, drenched in sweat, to lead his employees.
Cool.
Seems like a good guy to work for.
Doesn't Jack do a little bit of that Twitter stuff? Like, maybe not forcing his employees to drink, but having like sort of a guru vibe? Jack at Twitter?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't he do a little bit of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Every time I watch Silicon Valley, the only thing I can think of is I don't know how to parody these people anymore. You can't go You can't go extreme enough.
Mm. You know what's not beyond parody,
Jordan? You just do reality, and it's crazy. Oh, no.
The products and services that support this show.
I'm a product that supports Robert. I have no downsides and should be bought immediately.
That's a parody.
Insert WeWork commercial.
No,
WeWork. Actually, you work.
Our only sponsors are Koch Industries and, of course, their subsidiary, Nordyne Defense Systems. Right. Nordyne. If a wedding has to be blown up at range with a thermobaric warhead, it has to be Nordyne.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
World's in a great shape, right?
Products! Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Celebrate the end of your workday with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy Thursday flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So, for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. What's the catch? There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/behind. That's mintmobile.com/behind. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/behind. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
We're back. We're talking about WeWork, a perfect company that never did anything wrong. And that's the end of the episode.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right.
No. As WeWork expanded and opened new branches around the world, Adam's partner Miguel designed office spaces with narrow hallways and large open desks to encourage spontaneous encounters, in his
words.
Okay,
let me ask this real quick. They are still not making any money, correct?
Their profits double, or their revenue doubles every year.
Right.
But no, they're not making any money.
Gotcha. There we go.
Now,
so spontaneous encounters is a real fun way to say bottleneck.
Yeah. Most employees also hot desked, which meant they didn't have assigned desks. They just wound up wherever they could get in the morning. Now, this was supposed to make things feel free and open, but it really resulted in employees spending huge chunks of their day finding somewhere quiet enough to get some work done. Right. Sounds like a fucking nightmare. Right. If I'm going to go to an office, I better have a motherfucking desk.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm not going to go to an office, and you can't make me. I have enough guns at this point that nobody can. Adam attempted to cultivate a capitalist kibbutz-style culture by hosting yoga classes, wine tastings, networking panels, and all-night drinking bouts that employees were expected to attend. Nothing says fun drinking like mandatory.
Really feel like he's doing the kibbutz thing, but that from each to each part, he's skipping that part.
Oh, we're going to come to that. There's a quote part, that's that
the
in
whole
a little
part
bit
where
here.
He's like, oh, no, everything's good, but I'm exploiting you. Doesn't sound very kibbutz-like.
I thought the kibbutz was cool, but no one liked me. Yeah. What if they had to?
What if they forced them to and exploited their labor?
What if they'd be homeless if they didn't?
What if I got them all really fucked up?
Yeah. Also, they're wasted. Yeah.
Okay, good.
WeWork offices were emblazoned with slogans on the wall like hustle harder and love what you do. These could be seen as either motivational or haunting, depending on your personal attitude.
It's the Cowboys locker room, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Rapid growth came with equally rapid turnover. Few employees were able to handle Adam or WeWork for very long. The expansion was so rapid and turnover was so high that no one seemed to notice. It was all built on sand. WeWork would offer potential corporate clients free rent and volunteer to buy out their existing leases. This brought clients into WeWork properties, but required huge amounts of money, which was furnished by hundreds of millions of dollars in VC cash. Many companies began surfing through a series of free rent deals at sundry WeWork properties, doing the corporate equivalent of signing up for Uber with a burner email to take advantage of a week of free rides. So this is how he's keeping spaces open, how he's justifying the massive expansion.
Right.
You get free rent, you get like, we'll buy out your fucking lease. So the idea is that eventually they'll own so much space that everyone will have to use them. It's kind of like with Uber. Eventually, like, we're going to burn through money now, but at a certain point, we'll be the only ones able to offer this service, and then the money will flow.
They'll do the loss leader Walmart thing where it's like we're willing to take a hit on this just to make sure all the other stores in the town go out of business, and then we'll raise prices.
Yeah, and unlike Walmart, Walmart's an objectively brilliant idea. A store where I can buy 9mm bullets. Time Cop DVDs and Arizona Iced Tea within 10 feet of each other.
That's not, yeah.
That's the
not
necessities, yeah. As it were.
The necessities.
At least they're a thing, mm-hmm, that exists.
Look, if you have Time Cop on DVD, Arizona Iced Tea, and enough 9mm ammo, you can get all the other necessities.
It's true.
I can't afford Time Cop. I had to torrent it. It's unfortunate.
That's heartbreaking.
From Walmart.com.
At a 2015 industry conference, Adam Neumann declared, "We are in a consumption phase like nothing that has ever been seen."
Does he mean humans or WeWork?
No, WeWork.
Okay.
Yeah. He matched these words with actions by embarking on a mass leasing frenzy, committing WeWork to filling up more and more office space in more and more cities around the globe. One executive told the New York Times, "There was no discipline as to how Adam approved leases." Another recalled, "No one knew what anyone was doing." Now, empty facilities were being filled by offering businesses free rent, which kept the shell game moving along and kept WeWork's valuation rising, because all the investors are seeing is how fast this shit's expanding, and revenue is doubling every
year. Right.
Net revenue, different story. Revenue's up. So it looks like, okay, once we get through this consumption phase, this is going to be, you're going to be making a fuckload of money.
When you say that they're signing leases and there's clients, is this like, I have a small business and I want to use the office space? Is that the lease that we're talking about, or is it him having a lease?
He's leasing space from landlords.
Okay.
And he's in many cases paying, being like, I'll pay you double whatever your current tenants are paying for the space, because he just wants to have the right to all of the space.
Okay.
That's the idea. You acquire all of the space, and
he's
then the money.
He's a great negotiator.
He's a brilliant negotiator. Just double whatever they're paying you. Now, by 2015, WeWork was worth an estimated $10 billion in monopoly money. Keeping all this going was exhausting for employees. One of them later recalled, quote, "We would joke that we worked like slaves. Adam would have meetings on Sunday, and you could never miss those. Sometimes it wouldn't happen, or it would happen hours late, and you'd be there all night. You'd cry in the bathroom all the time."
It's a good bit.
Good bit.
It really good feels joke. Like the lesson that tech venture people learned from Enron was, we should try harder to get away with it.
Oh, only one of them died?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, we're good.
WeWork's CFO for a time was Ariel Tiger, one of Adam's Navy buddies.
He chief fun officer.
Yeah, well... not really.
I'm a conscientious objector to that joke.
Fine.
He frequently threatened to fire people while wandering WeWork's open desk office. From Vanity Fair, quote, "Every 2 weeks, Ariel would get a printout of payroll and he would go through the and redline the shit out of it, saying he wanted to reduce people's pay," a former executive said. "I remember walking through the office and Ariel would loudly say, 'Why do we have all these people? I could do what they're doing with two people.'" So,
I gotta
healthy.
Be honest, I kind of like that guy.
Healthy work. He is actually the most reasonable person in the story.
That's a fun vibe. The guy who threatens.
The guy shouting that in the office. Yeah. Not a healthy vibe is what I'm trying to paint the picture of here.
What's your payroll strategy? Well, I either give a thumbs up or thumbs down and one of them dies.
I don't like that guy in the real world, but like in a movie, I might want to play him.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? That's the kind of feeling I got.
Yeah, Matthew McConaughey would be, a good pick for that. Yeah. In June of 2015, WeWork raised $434 million more to fund their reckless growth. Right around that same time, 32 BJ Service Employees International Union, which represents cleaners in New York, launched a protest outside of WeWork's offices. Their issue was the fact that Neumann and McKelvey used non-union labor to clean their offices for $10 an hour, which is like half what they're supposed to get paid in the city of New York. Now, Neumann attempted to deal directly with picketing cleaners by approaching them with a New York Times reporter behind him and talking about his own background as an immigrant.
And then getting them really drunk.
Like you, I came here with not but $100,000 from my grandmother.
Yeah. Free booze and kombucha for all.
Yeah. This didn't work. They didn't buy that shit.
Did he take him to the roof?
I don't think he got to. I think they heckled him immediately. Adam later told a reporter with Fast Company, "The last thing I was going to do was work with the union because I didn't believe that it's fair to blackmail someone to do something." You're literally a landlord.
Oh, boy.
Now,
it's frustrating.
He did eventually sit down with Hector Figueroa, the union president. Figueroa recalled, "Rather than talking about the issue itself, he wanted to have a conversation about who we are as people." But Figueroa...
"Take your shoes off, bro.
Take your shoes
Let's
off,
figure
bro.
This whole thing
What
out,
do you think
man.
About stars?"
Then he got me really drunk.
Figueroa
pushed
was...
me off the roof.
Yeah.
Figaro was too smart for that shit. He pressed the issue, and eventually Adam agreed to hire back unionized cleaners for $18.46 an hour and health benefits. Figaro was so grateful that he got his way that he gave Adam a union jacket. For what it's worth, he walked away from the interaction feeling positively towards Adam.
Oh, God.
Less positive was the fact that in 2015, a San Francisco landlord kicked out two tenants' rights organizations from their offices to make room for WeWork. Adam had offered to pay double the rent, which guaranteed him the space and ensured that San Francisco's homelessness problem would get even worse. This may seem out of character for someone raised in the socialistic nexus of a kibbutz, but in later interviews, Adam was quick to mention that he considered the kibbutzim to be failed social experiments. Their chief flaw, in his eyes, was that everyone made the same amount of money.
Yeah, there we go.
That's the problem.
There we go.
Community was important to him, but only up to the point where you exhibited any weakness. Adam said, on one hand, community. On the other hand, you eat what you kill.
So that's where the Spartan kind of culture comes in there. I gotcha.
I don't think so, because the actual kibbutzes would have totally said, fuck that shit.
So this guy is just a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah, and has a real misunderstanding of
what
how...
What if I could evict everybody in the kibbutz?
Yeah, that's, what if I could evict them for not being cool enough or drinking Patron with me?
But I'm sure he would rationalize it like, all right, this, like, let's say in San Francisco, this housing organization, we take over their lease here or whatever. But they can just use the WeWork space.
They can just use the WeWork space.
I'm sure that there's some, like, that's how you sleep at night, knowing that, you know, you've
you just created
this.
Value, man. Oh, yeah. It's value. Ooh. It's good to create value.
Sure. And then these fucking people trying to help homeless people get to get fucked up at work.
There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Free beer, guys. Anyway, in 2017, Adam got on the phone with an executive from Blackstone, a major investment firm, to complain because it had invested money in a rival company to WeWork.
We don't work.
Yeah.
We work in hell!
Adam also refused to work with landlords who lease space to other co-working companies, and he sued several of these rivals for trademark infringement. Your work, you are work. We Labs and High Work, he said, were all infringing on WeWork's copyright. While Adam's company did not claim exclusive rights to the word work, he believed they owned the use of that word after a two-letter pronoun.
Wow.
So that was the company's argument.
So they are saying that if you put any two letters in front of work, you are infringing upon
You are infringing on WeWork's copyright.
All right. Okay.
What about We Twerk?
Like that might, I feel like he might sue you. Or hire you to give his employees mandatory twerking lessons.
Well, Jordan, we are going to test this.
There we go. I think we got to do it.
Now, while the company's valuation rose, there were worrying signs that beneath all the glamour, this was just a grift. In 2013, Neumann tried to buy a stake in a Chicago building that planned to lease space to WeWork. The board rejected this idea because it would be a conflict of interest for Neumann to personally own property that his company leased. Hmm. That's a little bit.
It's called vertical integration, Robert. It's vertical integration. That's totally fine.
It's called
fine.
Stealing money
it's
from
totally
investors.
Totally fine. Nobody's ever had an issue with it.
Now, in 2014, Adam maneuvered himself into control of the board of directors so he could approve his plan of personally buying up a number of properties and leasing them back to his company for millions of dollars. WeWork eventually signed lease agreements with four buildings Neumann owned. Since 2016, they paid almost $17 million to his properties. This is essentially theft of venture capital money, funneling it directly into the owner's pocket without informing the people paying of what's happening.
See, if it wasn't him getting the money, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, because venture capital, it's also, they're also idiots.
From venture capital.
Yeah. But it is a grift.
Because I have some sort of moral compass or whatever, but I'm fine with other people Robin Hooding.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it.
It is a huge grift.
Yeah.
And an obvious one.
Yeah.
Once but we start WeTwerk,
there we go.
It wasn't obvious at first. None of this actually came out until a while later when they filed for their IPO and all this stuff became public knowledge. Now, as the grift spun on, Adam continued to motivate his employees with impossible stories of where the brand was going. In 2015, he claimed, WeWork Mars is in our pipeline.
Ooh.
And
Red flag. Red flag. This dude, that's a little baddie.
You don't think he's going to go to Mars?
In our world, once you say, my business is going to Mars, that means we're in medbed territory.
Yeah.
We're fucked.
Yeah.
That's generally when, if I were in that meeting, I'd have to walk away.
Yeah. Gotta,
you know what?
Oh, Mars?
It's been a good ride.
Yeah. Mars? Mars, okay.
On the off chance you're talking literally, I have to leave. I cannot...
He told his employees that he'd met with Elon Musk and offered the company's services in prepping a future Mars mission. And I just love the thought that he thinks the company that leases office space would have anything to contribute to that.
Yet at the same time, I completely believe him. That he, yeah, that he met with Elon Musk
he
and they
did,
had that conversation.
He did say he met with Elon Musk. He also said that Musk turned him down, which makes sense. Even Elon Musk is a little bit like, no.
This you said Mars. I have a monopoly on the Mars grift right now, buddy. Don't try and step on my game.
Now, grand visions of the future were mixed with Adam's own growing reputation as something very much like a cult leader. I'm going to quote.
I think Jordan smelled that earlier.
Oh yeah, you absolutely did. I'm going to quote
somebody
now.
With experience, I know a cult leader when I see one.
I'm going to quote now from New York Magazine. Within WeWork, a mystique quickly developed around Neumann, who did little to downplay it. Until recently, an executive conference room at WeWork headquarters was decorated with a large photograph of Neumann surfing a wave.
Love it.
He has bragged about working 20-hour days and regularly called executive meetings that would begin after midnight. I've had meetings that started at 2 a.m. where he joined us 45 minutes late, but that meeting was worth millions, a former WeWork executive told me.
We were so drunk.
We could not stand. Shitting ourselves in the room. Yeah. Many people told me they bought into WeWork's grand mission only when Neumann was doing the preaching. At the beginning of every week, WeWork employees were required to stay after work for a Thank God It's Monday team-building event that could last for hours.
Oh, okay. So they also made them exhausted and tired and less than capable of making fully realized decisions.
All the things that cult leaders don't do.
I've heard of that before.
Nope. It's all the things you don't do as a cult leader.
Gotcha.
Neumann would typically speak, after which employees often walked around handing out shots of tequila that people were expected to consume.
Every time I'm out, he brings me back in.
Yeah. One former employee says Neumann offered her tequila during her job interview, and liquor was a constant presence at pretty much every company event, another perk for the largely millennial staff.
I'm picturing this dude like with a lampshade on his head.
Just yes.
Like just do dancing.
Many
around.
Employees know the name of Neumann's favorite tequila, Don Julio 1942, and offices around the country would keep it stocked for when he came to visit. One morning in 2014, not long after WeWork opened a new location in Washington, D.C., an employee arrived to find the game room trashed. There were cups lying around the room, which smelled to him like weed. When the employee reviewed the security footage from the night before to identify the culprits, he saw Neumann and Michael Gross, WeWork's vice chairman, drinking and partying on the Time Crisis arcade machine.
Drinking weed.
No, the room smelled like weed, and there was also like empty cups. Yeah.
I really feel like I have no problem with that. Of all of the things so far, he owns this business. He got drunk and high. It's not like he was tweaking on like crystal meth or anything.
Look,
like
you're
that.
No square.
Yeah. I'm cool with all of this stuff. The exploiting labor and that bullshit, I'm against.
You do get the feeling that when he wasn't around, the people didn't really drink or party.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
My experience with like workplaces that have alcohol in them, it's like most people don't do it, even when it's available.
Yeah.
Now, not everyone bought the permanent party vibe of the company. In 2015, WeWork bought a fancy private jet, which Adam Neumann immediately took to using all over the world. He smoked weed in it constantly, sometimes breaking international law to do so. His former chief of staff, Medina Bardi, got pregnant and had to stop traveling with Neumann to company events because he refused to not hotbox the company plane when she was in it.
Right.
Good stuff. She wound up filing a federal complaint against Adam for, among other things, retaliating against her for getting pregnant.
That's what I was
According to the Washington Post, Barty,
bogarting
quote,
the wheat thing.
Yes. According to the Post, Barty, quote, alleges that female employees were subjected to sexually offensive conduct, disparaged for taking maternity leave, and often paid significantly less than their male counterparts, according to a complaint filed Thursday with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Barty had two children during her more than 5 years at WeWork and claims Neumann referred to maternity leave as retirement and vacation, according to the complaint. She alleges she was demoted after both pregnancies and replaced by men at higher wages and given no instruction about her new responsibilities. So cool.
Yeah.
Now, that story didn't drop until 2019. In 2016, the company was still riding high, flush with billions of dollars in VC money, and on its way to becoming the largest private office renter in New York City. In the spring of that year, Neumann met the CEO of SoftBank, Masayoshi Son, at a dinner. Masayoshi held the purse strings to SoftBank's $100 billion investment fund. He was one of the biggest investors in the startup world, or the rest of the world, for that matter. Yeah. Adam badly wanted his money. He invited Masa on a tour of the company offices, and Masa told him he had 12 minutes to listen to a presentation. Neumann gave him the pitch and followed him out to his car when it was over, continuing to pitch.
Yeah. And then he played Masayoshi Takanaka's Seven Goblins, I assume, for 12 minutes, right?
I don't understand that joke in
Never
any way.
Never mind. All right.
Somehow, Adam won Masayoshi Son over. The elder businessman told Neumann that the only problem with his business plan was that WeWork was thinking too small. It should move from leasing office space to small businesses and working to leasing space to all businesses. Masayoshi offered him $4.4 billion on the spot.
Okay. All right. No. Bad.
Seems like a bad idea,
no,
right?
Bad.
Seems like a ridiculous thing to do.
What you should do is own your own country.
Yes. That's kind of where this goes.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds right.
Isn't this now just becoming entirely like real estate based? Because like if you're going to go to bigger companies, then you're going to need a building, like an entire building that you would then rent to them.
Yeah, you would rent to them instead of them renting it because they all rent their spaces.
Yeah, this is
it's a stupid idea.
This is an inversion of reality.
Yeah.
As a business model,
it's this thing people talked about with Steve Jobs, this reality distortion field that he had. Like Adam clearly has that ability, and he enraptures this guy and convinces him that like this dream of changing the world, changing work is more than just like what it actually is, which is we rent office space.
Yeah.
I don't understand how he did it, but he did it and he got $4.4 billion fucking dollars to do it.
That's insane. That's one of those things that I've talked about on our podcast is like, I would love to just like measure whether or not, like I want to talk to this guy and see if he can get me on his side.
Yeah.
Like I want to measure my ability to fight off a cult leader.
I really don't want you to do that because I know that you'll lose.
I gotta. I was born in it. I need closure on my life. I have to defeat a cult leader before I can grow as a person.
I mean, we could hunt down Adam Neumann and throw rocks at him.
I am would also that count? Fine with that.
That would count.
I don't think I trust you to go to the roof with Adam.
I don't trust me to go to the roof by myself.
Yeah. I do think that if should, you know, our lives ever go in that direction, let's say some investor gives us $4.4 billion.
And I get to start the cult that I've been working on for years.
Right? Yeah. I feel like a nice offshoot of that would be like maybe we make a reality show where we try and lure you into terrible cults of personality.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of terrible cults of personality, the episode's over. Part one. It's time for you to plug your own cults of personality.
Sure. Well, we do a podcast called Knowledge Fight.
Indeed, we do.
That people can find just by, I guess, Googling it. It's on iTunes. We talk about
really
Alex Jones a lot.
Yeah.
It's on Spotify.
That's true. Various other places around.
Yeah.
And then, we have Twitter and all that stuff.
It's @knowledge_fight. And I'm Jordan. I am somewhat of a comedian. And if you're looking to book me, I'm available.
Got an open calendar?
Tweet at GoToBedJordan. That'll do it.
If you run a comedy venue in Nome, Alaska, please force Jordan to come up.
I'm
there.
Not busy.
I want to try
I'm
to send you to Alaska.
Get me a plane ticket.
Alaska.
That's
get
my
me
goal
a plane
for this.
Ticket and I
no,
will
not you.
Go.
I can't come.
No, just Jordan.
Oh, come on.
I'm gonna follow.
I'm gonna send
we're
you.
Have to do an
I
want to
send. I want to send you to Panama. I want to get you both opposite sides of the hemisphere.
All right.
I'll just be singing opposite. That Panama song the whole time. They're drinking Cabo Wabo tequila in honor of Adam Neumann.
Well, I'm Robert Evans. This is my podcast. You're listening to it, so you know what it is. You can find the sources on BehindTheBastards.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram and @BastardsPod. You can find me on Twitter @IWriteOkay. And you can find love in your heart anywhere you also find a dollar, because capitalism, my friends, is the essence of love. And that's the note we're going to write out on.
A lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.